This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Hey, and good morning, everybody. Hope everybody's having a good day. I am here in Houston. I'm flying back from Cleveland in the Hall of Fame, trying to at least get back here as early as I possibly can. But here we have a chance to see what's going on with the Mariners. We got baseball going on, and that's going bad right now for the Mariners. It's going decent for the Seahawks. But let's get started right now with our headlines. All right, so the Mariners lose again last night, 7-2, and didn't get a good performance by Marco Gonzalez. He was beat up a little bit. The bats continue to be a big problem. That's a big issue right now and something that they've got to figure out because things are going bad. The A's won a 1-0 game last night, so all of a sudden they're a game and a half ahead for the wild card, and everything's trending so bad. What the Mariners have, I think, lost, 15 of the last 22. They're 7-15. They're batting, the worst batting. They're averaging 2.8 runs a game. It's bad. And I don't know what they're going to be able to do to fix it. I know that Scott Service, after the game, seemed optimistic they're going to get out of this thing, but it's now been going on for more than a month, since July 1st. So I don't know if they're going to be able to handle all this, but what is going to happen is that they've got to do something because it's bad. They put Juan Nicasio on the DL, 10-day DL, because of a knee issue, brought up Chase Bradford. I mean, so they brought him up, and of course the bullpen still has some struggles, but Juan was, of course, one of the ones that struggled the most with a earned run average is over 6, and you kind of figured that something wasn't right with him. We'll see what he ended up doing with the knee. So the series continues against Toronto today. It'll be a night game tonight at 7:10, pregame at 6 as the Mariners continue to lose. Seahawks made a couple roster moves from defensive linemen yesterday, nothing too big. Hall of Fame weekend is going on. Ray Lewis is going to make a big speech, and of course, Terrell Owens is going to be in Chattanooga trying to do his thing, which of course is on a different plane. That's a little bit unusual. But that's, hey, that's T.O., and of course, those are our headlines. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to J.B. in Renton. Hey, J.B.
Hey, Mr. Clayton, how are we doing? It's fine. Sunny Saturday morning, sir.
Good. I'm glad it is sunny because I'm here down in Houston, and it's sunny and hot.
Oh yeah, it's a little toasty down there right there. I agree with you. Are you at Houston's training facility?
No. I went to Browns practice yesterday to see a scrimmage that they had, and Baker Mayfield had a nice touchdown drive to open the scrimmage. But then he was going against the second team. As soon as they put the first team in, he was shut down totally. So I'm just trying to get back home to be with my wife tonight. I was able to get an earlier flight after the show, so getting home at about 7:14.
Oh, okay, good. Good deal. Hey, what do you think of Tyrod Taylor as the quarterback when he was running with the first team?
He was okay. I mean, he had a nice two-touchdown drive where he completed 6 consecutive passes. You know, I kind of like him, but you can see where there's some limitations in what he's able to do. I mean, he's mobile. He is, I think, pretty reasonably accurate. Doesn't have the strongest arm, so that's a big issue. But, I think he's good enough, and I think he can get them through the season. You know, they're better. I can tell you that. They're better on defense. You can see they stacked some things up there. They're deep at the running back. I think they got offensive line problems, though. I mean, the thing that concerns me is that they were saying a week ago that they would have Joel Bitonio, the Pro Bowl caliber guard. Their plan F would be to put him out at left tackle. Well, guess what? He was a left tackle yesterday, because of the retirement of Joe Thomas. So all of a sudden, I think you can, you've weakened now two areas if you have him at left tackle. I don't know if he's going to be able to hold up. He's a guard and a very good guard, but can that guard make the move to be the most important spot on the offensive line? I kind of debate it.
Yeah, definitely. As far as the running game is concerned, do you like their running game? Because that could be key to help out with the situation with their quarterback situation. How do you like their running game?
I like it, but I'm baffled. Because, they took Duke Johnson, who's their third running back, a draft choice from 2005, and gave him $5.2 million a year. All right? Mm-hmm. Carlos Hyde, I like. Nick Chubb, I like a lot. But why do you pay $5.2 million for your number three running back? I don't understand that. Particularly, they did this after drafting Nick Chubb from Georgia. So that, to me, doesn't make much sense.
And also with Carlos Hyde there, they got a pretty decent trio of running backs there that could definitely relieve some pressure off of their passing game and not having those quarterbacks have to do so much. So do you see Tyrod Taylor being the starting quarterback?
100%, yeah.
Okay.
I think the thing with Baker is that, he's small. And it's very noticeably small. Mm-hmm.
You can see that. He's not a big guy. He uses a lot of his attributes and a lot of his athleticism to get around. And your offensive line, without having a big quarterback, has got to be key as far as opening those passing lanes for him to distribute the ball.
Mm-hmm.
I can see where you equate that with Baker Mayfield as far as putting him out there and the offensive line is not up to spec. You could have some problems.
No question. I tell you what, I mean, he does have some good skills. I think he can be a pretty decent quarterback. I mean, I think of the quarterbacks in this year's draft, he was probably the second most ready. Josh Rosen's probably the most ready.
Yeah, as far as that's concerned. Now, did you get a chance to take a glimpse of some of that preseason game Thursday?
I was at the game.
Oh, okay. Oh, all right. Good. Yeah, that's right. All right. Now, what do you think about... What do you think about the quarterback situation in Baltimore? I know it's Joe Flacco. He's the starter. But
it's not even close.
What do you think about his backup?
Well, if you're talking about RG3, I mean, he did okay.
Uh-huh.
But if you're talking about Lamar Jackson, there's no way he's close to being ready. I think you can see that he can run. That's good. He can make some good throws inside the numbers, some good quick throws. But when you're talking about outside the numbers, he was very, very inconsistent. Had one interception. You can see that that's something that he has to really work on. And I think he's going to need most of the season, if not all, to be able to get that right.
Yeah, I think he's one of those quarterbacks. He has to sit behind a veteran for a while.
Yes.
And get to learn the ins and outs, the nuances of the game. I prefer for him to sit there at least a good 2 or 3 years.
That wouldn't be bad.
That wouldn't be bad at all. Because when you looked at that throw that he threw for that interception, when he turned and looked, he didn't see that cornerback just sitting there looking for him to throw the ball.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and when he released it, the guy just jumped on it because he was just waiting for him to do it. He was baiting him into doing it. So, I mean, those things, those intricacies in his game is something that I think he has to sit back and learn from a veteran to show him how to do that.
Here's what I wonder. I mean, will Joe help him? Because you got to feel that he feels hurt by this, because he realizes the more he helps him, the more he's going to get cut. And that'll be next year. So I think you can see that's on the plate. And then secondly, they're two different styles of quarterbacks. I mean, he can help to a certain degree, but Joe Flacco's a big, tall quarterback that throws from the pocket, and Lamar's kind of like a Russell Wilson, Cam Newton type that runs around and make big plays. I think there's a limitation to what Joe would be able to help him with.
But, you know, it is a limitation, but you need that pocket presence. You know, you need to learn how to function within the pocket. Even though you're an athletic quarterback, you still need to learn that pocket presence, because what teams and defenses are going to do to you, they're going to keep you in the pocket.
Right.
They're not going to allow you to use your athleticism. So Joe could give him that attribute if he wanted to. Give him that attribute on how to function in the pocket, when to throw, and all, you know, what all the nuances that a quarterback needs to learn how to function in the pocket. He needs that badly, desperately.
No question.
Because relying just totally on his athleticism is not going to win the day.
No.
You know?
No.
Ask Robert Griffin how that turned out.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You saw him after the game. He got real emotional.
Yeah, he did it right after the game.
Yeah, almost like he was crying.
Yeah, I guess he feels that, you know, to be back into the NFL and having that opportunity is something that he cherishes.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and
as far as that's concerned, and you really need to cherish that. Now, let's talk a little bit about that Hall of Fame. You know, Ray Lewis, 45 minutes to an hour on a speech?
Probably, yeah. I think somebody said that he's got his speech written for like 23, 24 minutes. I mean, you know it's going to go longer than that.
Oh, you know that. You know that's coming. Come on, Ray Lewis.
Mm-hmm.
Ray Lewis is going to have a sermon going on up there for a while. You know, but it was good to see them receive their jackets last night. You know, it just baffles me how Terrell Owens does it. I think he's going to regret that. You know, not sharing that with your family, your friends, your old coaches and all this and what have you, your teammates, your ex-teammates. I mean, how did you pass that up?
Well, and also, I mean, I know this from some Hall of Famers, particularly one Hall of Famer that said he talked to like 30 or 40 guys. And this is back when we were voting, right? And said that, there's more guys than you would expect that really do not want him part of this club. Now, again, this is not a club. This is an honor. This is the greatest honor you can have in pro football, becoming a member of the Hall of Fame. And T.O. was able to do it in the third try. And, you know, it's funny. I know that a list was run yesterday of all – Rick Gosin ran it – of all the guys that had to wait 3 years to get in. And the list is pretty impressive. And, you know, he's pouting because he didn't get in the first ballot. I mean, come on, man.
Come on. Dr. Doom had to wait 34 years, huh?
Mm-hmm. Ken Easley had to wait 25.
Jerry Kramer had to wait.
He had to wait, 60? So it was like 35, 40 years.
I mean, come on. Are you serious? You know, I mean, if you're talking about a little 3 year span compared to these guys that waited 34 plus years and you're complaining, you got in. That's all that matters. You know, could be the little party pooper and wipe himself off and get up and go do his right. I just think he's going to regret that as time progresses and he starts to look at it. He's going to regret that. You know?
Well, what it comes down to, here's what he's a Hall of Famer who's electing not to be in the Hall because he's not showing up in the Hall. I mean, he's a Hall of Famer right now in name. He's got a statue that he's not going to be able to see, and he's got a jacket that's being mailed to him in the mail.
It's absolutely unbelievable.
I hope that they do it so postage is due. Yeah, and you notice that none of the five teams that he was with stepped forward to try to help him get them there. I know that Carmen Policy, the former president of the 49ers, came back and talked to him and told him what to do and what not to do, and he did everything the opposite. He said, don't do this, don't try to hold out and not be there, you know, make a right speech, do the right thing, and all he's doing is just pouting and trying to make, you know, I love the fact that he says that he wants to change the Hall voting because he thinks it's unfair and they're not doing a good job. What? By putting him in, do we not do a good job? He's in.
I mean, you got in. I mean, it's like going to the movies, and once you get in the movie theater, I don't want to see the movie. But why didn't you come? You know, I mean, come on. I just don't get that one, man. It's such a treat for those players to be involved in that situation. You know, I heard Tony Dungy talking the other day about the guys like Orlando Pace that he went in, and those guys, he knew them, but he never really talked to them. He said, now they're lifelong friends. You know, from just that 1 week of talking to those guys, I think he's gonna really regret that later on in life. That selfishness, what it did for him, it messed him up. You know.
Yeah. Well, that's he's making himself. He doesn't have any money, I guess, and he's got this attitude that is always inflamed. I still like the one fact that one former coach of his, and I don't even know if he could get a coach to even speak in his behalf. Basically, said when you had T.O. on your team, you had 52 teammates, and then a bleep. It's like he was the bleep.
That's pretty much what he is, Mr. Clayton. I mean,
it
come
is.
On. I just don't get that one. It's going to be a fun
I just,
time
the one thing I feel fortunate is that I'm going to be in a plane when he's making his speech. So even if the plane has a DirecTV or something like that, I won't be watching it.
Oh man! Well, I know you're going to catch it up on the replay and have to listen to that. That's going to be entertaining, Mr. Clayton. You know you will.
Absolutely. Hey, JB, got to run.
All right, Mr. Clayton, have a safe travels, my friend.
Okay, let's get on the phones here at 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Raider Jim. Hey, Jim, how are you?
All right, John, how's Houston?
I'm doing hot. Of course, I can't say anything. I'm sitting in an air-conditioned room, so it's like I'm not in bad shape, and just, eventually we'll go over and get the flight and then try to come home.
Yes, indeed. Well, John, thanks for taking care of business today by having the show. I mean, I know it's a huge huge responsibility, but you handle it masterfully, and we all thank you for it, John.
Well, thank you very much.
Absolutely. So, John and I was just talking anecdotally this morning with my son. He goes, "Now, who's holding out of Seahawks training camp?" I go, "Earl Thomas." And he goes, "Is that right?" I go, "Yeah, only one of four players in the NFL." And he goes, "Well, does he have a contract?" I go, "Yes, he has a contract." He goes, "Well, why does he need practice?" And there you go. You know, from a 12-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, it's just incredible. I just can't believe it. But, you know, he's a great player, but he should be in camp, in my opinion, John. That's just my two cents for what it's worth.
Well, and that's the illogical part of this, because, I mean, if you're really thinking about where the equation is, okay, there's three other holdouts, and, you know, Khalil Mack is holding out, and they've not even had any contact, I guess. At first they said John Gruden hadn't called him. Okay, that's fine, because he's not the negotiator. He's the decision maker. But then they find out that they really haven't made him an offer, and they don't want to pay him. I mean, basically, John Gruden came out, and this is, again, where I worry about the Raiders is not John Gruden, the coach, which is John Gruden, the general manager, because right. It's like, okay, the comment that he made is like, hey, the defense was pretty poor with him out there, and I guess they don't want to pay quarterback-type money for a defensive player, but again, what are you going to do, not have a good defense? I mean, he's their best player. I mean, argue maybe Derek Carr's better, but it's like, I don't understand that. So
I think he's their best player by a long shot. I mean, Carr's great, and Carr will be there, I think, longer than Khalil Mack. But by the same token, he's their best player. He was the he was the defensive player of the year 2 years ago, for heaven's sakes, on a mediocre team. You know, and I should rephrase, on a mediocre defense. You know, offense
right.
was awesome, but you know, shoot, John, I don't understand why Gruden would make such a comment. You know, I mean, that's just, I don't know. Maybe it's just, you know, kind of poking him in the eye and say, hey, come on, let's get a deal done. But I don't think that's a good negotiation stance, in my opinion.
No.
I mean, they should pay him the money.
Right. But getting back to the Earl Thomas thing, and here's the thing that I find a little bizarre. Okay, now, you know, you understand, I mean, when you get third contracts, you're talking about guys that are 29, 30 years old,
right.
As great a player as they are, but again, you may not get the full value of that through the 4 or 5 years you'll sign him. But the other three holdouts are all going into their second contracts, and they're all in their mid-20s.
Really?
You know, Khalil Mack is in his mid-20s. You've got Le'Veon Bell, I think, he's 25. Aaron Donald is... 25, 20. So I think he's 27. So
okay.
you worry a little bit by giving that third contract. But in this case for Earl Thomas, he's the only one going for the third contract, and he's holding out. Problem for him is that he's doing it at a time that this team is resetting his attitude as to where it is. I mean, who's all in? And of course, you've got KJ Wright in the same situation. He's going for his third contract, but he's in here helping the young guys and showing leadership. Earl
Indeed.
Thomas is not showing any leadership by holding out.
Right, indeed, John. Those are very good points. Very good points. Speaking of transactions, did you see what Gruden did the other day? They cut the kicker, Giorgio Tedesco. He was there yesterday in practice, and at the end of practice, they said, "We don't want you around." So, I mean, that's pretty amazing. They've got now.
Yeah, but you know the reason for that, right? He didn't want to have a left-footed kicker. And the team had two left-footed kickers last year, Sebastian Janikowski and Trevecchia. And it's like, I guess that's a problem for holders. But I guess you can see that right now, what Michael Dixon is going through trying to hold for Sebastian Janikowski. It's better to have it as a right-hander or not to go back and forth. That's a challenge. But it's like, I find that bizarre that now they've taken two kickers and had to go on the street for an undrafted guy. And then They signed a veteran. It's like, I don't get that. They've now weakened that position.
Right, yeah, and then you can't be weak in that position. I mean, it can come back to really hurt you. It can be an Achilles heel for you. It can make or break your season. I mean, Gruden knows this better than anyone. That's why they went out and got Sebastian Janikowski in the first round, and he was a goal. But, yeah, the veteran they signed was a guy named Mike Nugent, but I don't think he's going to compete for the starting job. He's just there to, you know, hold the fort down until the rookie gets his footing, if you will, literally and figuratively, and goes forward. So I just find that amazing. On the positive side, though, Gruden was, showing these guys films. Some old films back from the 70s and the 80s. These athletes have never seen. and apparently they found it revealing, you know. And the good thing about Gruden, similar to Bill Belichick, by the way, is that they're not only are they students of the game, I mean, they're true historians. They know, like, how things happened in the past and have been able to use the past as a way to make sense of now and in the future. I mean, nobody's better at that than Belichick. He just knows the game like nobody's business. And I think that's refreshing that Gruden's doing that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and in particular, too, I mean, I think it appeals to the veterans. I like the comment that he made about Rodney Hudson, the center. Said that's the best center he's ever worked with. Now, of course, you can't say he's the greatest center in Raider history because Jim Otto's going to win that one. But he didn't say that. He said the right way. It's like the best one he's ever worked with. And so that was kind of a nice compliment.
Yes, of course, it was a nice compliment. And, you know, someone on the lecture circuit these days, a guy that came through San Francisco, a guy named Peyton Manning, was in town, and they brought him into camp for a speech, which I thought was really great to hear that they've done that. And then if you read some of the articles out there, apparently Gruden knows Peyton Manning pretty well when they would have the combine, and Gruden was in the broadcast booth. He'd go call up on Peyton Manning, and they'd sit around, have a few beers, and talk about football. And that's how they became friends. And so when Peyton was in the Bay Area, they brought him in to talk to the Raiders, which I thought was encouraging to see.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the advantages that John comes in because, I mean, he's been out of football, 10 years? He has all these ideas that he's been storing up. And, I mean, say what you want. It's like, I know how this guy prepares. I mean, he is so prepared. I mean, he would purposely go to colleges and try to learn some of the college offenses. And this is, you know, during these 10-year periods right before he would start doing the quarterback school. And so I thought that was fun. So I think that, you know, he will bring some innovative things. The problem is I still worry about John Gruden, the GM.
I do, too, John. I do, too. I think these are good comments to make. And I just I'm crossing my fingers because, you know, he's got a big, big contract, as you and I have talked about in the past and everybody knows about. And he's got to make good on that. And I hope it works out.
Hey, Jim. Hey, thank you for the phone call.
Okay, John. Happy travels.
Thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Cornelia in Seattle. Hey, Cornelia.
Hi, John. How are you?
I'm doing good.
Okay, so I had a couple, well, more than two, but I have some questions for you. My first one was, how well do you think Shaquem Griffin will, like, do as one of the smallest linebackers in the NFL with only one hand?
I think he's going to do very well. I think you can already see that they didn't want to rush him, but I think he's exceeding the expectations to a point where I don't know how much playing time he's going to get, but I think that you can see that he may get some. You know, I can't say that he's going to fall into the strong side outside linebacker position because technically he's playing the weak side, which takes advantage of his speed. But I think that at 220 some, he'll get to 230 pound. That's big enough because what they're relying on is his speed and his instincts. Now, as far as his hand, it's remarkable to see what he's been able to do. I mean, he was a defensive conference player of the year, and so much of it was his tackling. So he's very good with that. So I don't really see any problems, and I think so far so good as far as what he's doing in practice because, you know, he's making plays just about every day.
Yeah. Okay. He seems like a really good player, and so, I mean, I live in Seattle. Seahawks is my favorite team, and it's been pretty hard for me since, like, Richard Sherman left, and Cam Chancellor was my favorite, but he, like, went away, so that was hard. But I think Shaquem Griffin's going to be, like, the next, like, big, like, Lynch person.
Yeah, could be, because, I mean, you know, his brother Shaquille is doing a great job. I think that you'll start to like Trey Flowers because he's that big, tall cornerback that reminds you of Richard Sherman. And just, you know, you have to just go back to 2011 because that's the model year that I think you can compare this team to. You know, they had guys like Sherman and, Byron Matthews and others that you didn't know what they were going to do, but injuries happened and they got the opportunity to go out there and you saw how well they can do. I mean, there's talent on this team, and people, I think, outside the city don't recognize it, but Frank Clark, I think, can be a star player because you see that he can get the sacks, and so they need to get something done with him on a contract. I mean, you can see that Griffin right now is looking very good. There's been a very good week for Tedrick Thompson, the safety. So, I mean, these guys now have an opportunity. You know, before, when you had the Legion of Boom and you had, you basically had seven core defensive players that weren't going to be removed because, I mean, they were among the best in the game. But that didn't create other opportunities for the young guys to step up and play. Now these young guys are stepping up, and I think that Tedrick Thompson is taking great advantage of it. I mean, I think he's bolted past Delano Hill. He's battling Maurice Alexander for playing time at safety. It's sad to see the big names go, but unfortunately, that just happens in football.
Yeah, okay. So my next question is, have the Seahawks actually said they're unwilling to consider, like, negotiation and extension, to consider negotiating an extension for Earl Thomas, even if he ends his holdout and reports to training camp?
No, they just aren't negotiating now while he's holding out because, you know, why, if you're them, would you want to, you know, pay him or offer him a contract when you really don't know for sure he wants to be here? Sure, he says he wants to be here, but is the money more important than, you know, his contribution to the team? Now, again, you know how good he is as a player. He's a Hall of Fame caliber safety, but the problem is, you know, they don't know if he's all in. And if they bring him in, pay him a contract, and all of a sudden he doesn't believe in this team, then you got a problem. I mean, and that's understandable. He may not believe this is a playoff team. And if that's the case, then you've got to move on and get a different relationship. But the big thing is they control it because, you know, they still have him under contract.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, he was also one of my favorites. And then my third question is, do you know the origin of the name the Legion of Boom?
Yeah, it was, and actually goes back to Bob Gross and Tom. You know, when they were, I think they had just completed an interview with Cam Chancellor, and so Cam basically said that it's like, "Yep, that's what I do. I lower the boom." And so at that time, it came off in the next segment, and they were taking text questions and calls on what you want to call this. And so somebody called up or text one of the two and said, "Let's, how about Legion of Boom?" And boom, that just registered, and so. Really, it goes back to Bob Gross and Tom. Not that they created it, but a fan created it by basically taking what Cam Chancellor said and adding Legion of in front of it.
Yeah, okay. Thank you. Thank you for your time.
Hey, thank you very much. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Ryan Roland-Smith from the Mariners broadcast joins us next. We're going to talk about what to do with this team. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Joining us right now, Ryan Roland-Smith. And Ryan, this is getting real scary how this batting problems have continued, other issues. I mean, it's been since July 1st. The team's only averaging 2.8 runs a game, and that margin of error becomes very tight for the pitchers just to try to salvage things. And right now, things are going bad.
Yeah, I think it comes down to when that's the big number, the runs per game, obviously, because you got to score runs. And I think, you know, some of these the little things just aren't happening right now for the Mariners. The at-bats, for example, last night, you know, Baruchy was a young guy they've never seen before, but it can be agonizing when you're up against a guy like that who's a ground ball pitcher. With three pitches, he can generate ground balls up in the 70% range. You're trying to just middle, and you get on top of that, on top of that fastball, on top of that changeup, hammering it into the ground. That's when you start speeding your at bats up. You start to clinch a little bit too much early in the count. And I think these little things all add up. The on base percentage is way down in the month of July and August, so they're just not able to create traffic on the bases and create those better quality pitches for the guys coming up after them.
I mean, have you seen a stretch like this on teams where it just doesn't, this is a team when Robinson Cano was there, was scoring 4.7 runs a game. Without him, I guess you could see it's worth half a run a game because they're down to 4 to 4.1 runs per game. And now it's down to 2.8 with all these guys. Yeah. I mean, you have four or five guys that are batting 200 or less and are got an on-base percentage of around 300. I mean, this is just an amazing stretch of just decline.
Yeah, you do see it, team to team. The trick is, obviously, for the teams that, do sustain the top of their divisions, how quickly can they cut, stop the bleeding? How quickly can they cut it off? How quickly can those two guys in the middle of the order, with two guys on, get that big hit? I think right now with the Mariners, it's just a little bit contagious, and it's ongoing. And they can feel it, too. This is a team, a lot of young guys in this team, and obviously they've got a lot of veterans too, but a lot of young guys on this team, a guy like Mitch Haniger, for example, who came out of the gates on fire, hitting in that six hole when Robinson Cano was in the lineup. You mentioned the runs scored with Robbie Cano hitting third, and with Mitch Haniger hitting down in the six hole, he was hitting 300 and hitting the ball hard too. And then all of a sudden he gets up in that three hole in the lineup, and things change. He gets pitched around a little bit, doesn't get the same pitch quality. So I think, and he's a young guy too. So when you factor these things in, a couple of these guys who the bar has been raised high, key parts of that lineup, and all of a sudden it's this ongoing effect where they're just going through it, where they just cannot generate traffic, first of all. I think that's a big part of this. We saw early in the year when Gene Segura and Dee Gordon were creating all kinds of havoc on the bases, steal attempts, distracting pitches, and that changed things. And now I think, it's amazing too what, when you're talking about runs per game with Robinson Cano without, it's amazing what, when you have to shift just one guy out of the lineup and shift everyone up, the impact that makes, and also the depth of the bottom part of the lineup. But again, the good news is, we're days away from having huge impact that in the middle of that lineup. So it'll be interesting to see once he comes back. Maybe that gives him that little jolt of energy, especially offensively.
Oh, no question. But I guess the problem is still waiting 10 more days before he's going to be active. And then how much now can they lose ground to the A's? Because say what you want, the A's are doing as what the Mariners were doing in the early part of the season. They're just winning everything.
Yeah, and I hate to say it, and I hate saying this on air, but they are mirroring some of the magic that the Mariners had in May, June, even back in April. And it's tough to watch. They played that long game last night. I think it was about 13 innings by the time they got all said and done, the A's. And you just have that feeling like that they're going to win. They're going to come out on top of a game like that because of just that, just whatever you want to call it, just that magic, what's going on with them right now. They weren't going to lose that game. And they've just got so much energy at the right time of the year. But again, you mentioned Robinson Cano's coming back in 10 days. That's still weeks and weeks of big innings and big runs to get down the stretch. I think this is still, no matter what you're seeing right now from this offense, this is still going to come down. There could be two games back or a game back heading into the end of September. I think they're going to be right there. The A's are going to cool off, in my opinion. I just don't think, with their starting pitching with Brett Anderson, you saw what he did earlier this year, and he all of a sudden turned it on. Even Trevor Cahill. So some of these guys, beyond that, that rotation is still a little bit dicey. So I just don't think the A's can sustain. I think they will cool off a little bit, and hopefully they cool off at the right time when you're talking beginning or mid-September, and then the Mariners start to figure out how to score three or four runs early in the game and get that momentum back.
No question. Marco Gonzalez had a tough start, but I guess, that just happens. He has pitched so well. What have you liked about Marco?
I thought there was a lot of good to take away from last night. And again, it's a tough time of year where if this was middle of May, you could digest what he did last night a little easier. I think the strikeout number, any time with him, when the strikeout numbers are up, he's pitching to contact, he's more attacking guys. He's inside the strike zone. I think that's the difference for him. He had some huge strikeouts in the middle of big innings where he had guys on with none on one out, right? And he was able to stick with what he does best. He didn't try and do too much. Sometimes when you're a young pitcher and all of a sudden you give up that leadoff double or a team struggling around you to score runs, and you know that you can't give up that second, third run. And I'm talking early in the game here. That you try and do a little bit too much. He didn't do that, and that's what I love about watching that maturation process of Marco Gonzalez. That cutter's still up in the strike zone, middle, that just gets really bad swings. The command, no walks, little things like that he has to take into the next game. Not the fact that I know he was emotional after the game last night, and about the Blue Jays fans coming in and the quotes he had and everything else. But I think with him, it's important to stay even keel, take what he did from last time out and take that into Texas. That's going to be huge because Texas is a team that he can really take advantage of. That's a team that the Mariners can put up you know, four runs after this series here in Toronto, that's a place where they can seriously do some damage, get that offense cranking down in Texas. I think that's going to be important. But a lot of good things to take. Again, he just got beat, two-run home run, and Russell Martin with a pitch just middle of the plate. Besides those two mistakes, consistently, when you're looking at, you know, 90 pitches, or 80 pitches, sorry, from Marco, you know, 90% of them were executed pitches, and that's what he needs to take away.
Going back to Thursday, Felix Hernandez went five innings, had 92 pitches, you know, basically salvaged something, pitched well enough. But how do you look at what Felix is doing, and, you know, can he bounce back and even get better? Because certainly they need him big time.
They really do. They really do. Can he bounce back? I think, you know, when you look at his body language, his expression, his demeanor right now, it's not Felix Hernandez. This is a guy who, you know, he pitches off that presence, pitches off that you know, alpha that he has made him so good. When he basically walks around like he owns the place, that kind of mentality right now with him, he's just second guessing everything he's doing, and you can see that too. I get the fact that they want him to pitch more with his off speed stuff and everything else, but when you watch him throw with those pitches, when you are down like he is mentally, and you've been asked to, you know, essentially throw secondary stuff all the time, it's basically telling you, look, stay away from damage, stay away from contact. So when you watch him pitch, he's pitching a little bit more defensively at the moment, and that's not a recipe for him that works. I think for him, I'm still a big believer, and you've seen flashes of this throughout the year, he has to pitch off that fastball. Get the percentage of fastballs up a little bit. Everyone talks about he's lost the velocity. It doesn't matter. He still has a ton of movement on that pitch. I think if he can pitch off that fastball a little bit more and get to two strikes, you know, with a high percentage of fastballs, then he can go with that plus breaking ball and plus changeup. But I think with him, the biggest hurdle he has to get over at the moment is what's between the ears. Right now, he is feeling like he's letting people down. He's disappointed with himself. He's vocal about it. He said he's never been through a stretch like this in his career. And so this is a crossroads for him. It's one of those things that, you know, he can learn from this and say, okay, what makes me great? And it doesn't have to be physically or stuff. What makes me great is what I do, you know, in between the years, how I feel about myself, how I carry myself, the taking up the space on the mound and everything else. I think he needs to get back to that first, and then from there come up with a game plan where he can say, look, I trust that two-seamer down and away. It's not going to get hit hard. Or I trust that fastball up and in to set up that breaking ball away, set up those off-speed pitches a little bit more. But again, this is something that, you know, I think if he makes the next start, go into it, nothing to lose. Just go back to enjoying what makes him so great, and that's competing. I think that's the first step, and then build from there. But you said it, John. For these guys to be successful, Felix has to be close to what he was before, or, I mean, if he can't quite get to what he was before in the next couple of weeks, obviously this is something that he could do, obviously, in the off season and work on different things physically and mentally. But for right now, if he can get a little bit close to what he was, I think he can really help.
Okay, well, Ryan, of course, will be listening tonight and over the weekend. They've got to do some damage right now with Toronto. They've lost two games, and even a split was not good, but they've now got to find a way to salvage a split. Hey, Ryan Rowland-Smith, thanks for joining us. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Looks like the Seahawks have a big tryout day coming up tomorrow. A bunch of veterans coming in. We'll get to those names coming up. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Tara in Mercer Island. Tara, how are you on this Saturday?
I'm great. It's a good seafare weekend. How are you doing?
Doing well. Looking forward to flying back home. I'm halfway there right now. I actually took the flight from Cleveland to Houston, and so now after this show, I'll just board the flight and try to get home a little earlier than I expected.
That's good. I was at training camp on Thursday, and I just wanted to see what you thought of the Seahawks wide receivers.
you know, they're fast. I mean, that's the one thing that I think is intriguing because, I mean, they've got some height, they've got some speed, and right now everything's kind of wide open. I like what I see in Jerron Brown and what he's able to do. I think the good thing that you were there when Brandon Marshall started to act and do some things, and I think that's going to be very important because he'd been very limited coming off ankle and toe surgery. I mean, he made a couple big plays, and I think you saw the celebration that happened after he made it, particularly the one touchdown catch that Russell Wilson threw to him on a back shoulder throw. So I thought that was good. I think Amara Darbo is starting to come on. Marcus Johnson shows some good speed. And so it's kind of an interesting group. The one that I think is the biggest surprise is David Moore. David Moore is a seventh-round pick, really came from a small school, was completely lost in his first year, was on the practice squad, and then some teams wanted him. They kept him, and I think he's probably the most improved player on the team right now.
Yeah, I liked how Brandon Marshall did. It's good to have a big wide receiver, like a Jimmy Graham-type wide receiver. I think the talk about Jimmy Graham, he was a very good touchdown threat, and I feel like Brandon Marshall will be that if he makes the team.
Yeah, that's why I think it's important.
I also like Darbo a lot, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good that he's starting to come on right now. That's what I think is the intriguing thing because, I mean, they do need that red zone presence. And I think having a veteran like Marshall, particularly knowing that there's going to be some young receivers that are going to make this team, I think that could be good because I think that, you know, he can teach them something. But when you're looking at, 6'5", and or 6'4", 220, and again, his accomplishments, I mean, you look back at his career and 12,000-plus yards that he has, it puts him on the pace to maybe be a potential Hall of Famer. And I think he can squeeze another year or two. I mean, I think he can squeeze this year because, you know, the expectations are such. I mean, you're not expecting a 100-catch season from him. You're hoping that maybe he can get between 40 and 50, and if he can do that and get touchdowns, then he can be a great addition.
Yeah. I like Trey Flowers. You said that he really stuck out to you. He hits really hard. I like his style.
Mm-hmm. No, I do too. And I mean, when you see him over there on that right side, kind of lining up against the wide receivers, I mean, you can see that he has similarities because again, it's a different number, but it has that look of like a Richard Sherman. Because again, and I think that what I like is that he's adjusting better now. You know, I think that when he was going straight in man, he would pick things up and do well. But I think now he's starting to adjust a little bit more when they start to adjust the route. So I think that I wouldn't say that he's ready for playing time now, but I think he's on pace to eventually be able to get some playing time.
Yeah, I like Tavon Reed too. He unfortunately picked off Russell Wilson and I think Austin Davis. Mm-hmm. He looked good too.
Yeah, I mean, Alex Magoo, I think, has kind of dropped off a little bit. I think, now that people are knowing him a little bit better. But I still think I like his talent. I mean, the question is, can you count on him to be the backup? And that's why we'll see more in the preseason game. But it's a pretty good battle right now between Davis and Magoo.
Yeah, I would go with Austin Davis just because he's not that Wesley really needs to have a veteran backup behind him because it's his seventh year and he knows a lot too. But Austin Davis also knows Brian Schottenheimer's system, so
right.
It's good to have someone familiar.
No question. But did you enjoy it over there at practice?
Yes, I really liked it. It's a new era. Like you can tell, it's Bobby Wagner and Russell Wilson. Team, just how they carry themselves with a lot of confidence, but it's quieter. Like Richard Sherman and Michael Bennett were a little bit louder. They're great players, don't get me wrong, but you can just tell that Russell and it's Bobby's team by just the quiet presence of them on the field.
Hey, Tara, I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Thank you.
Thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. So at the moment, it looks like four guys are coming in to work out for this team on their day off on Sunday. Dominic Rogers-Cromartie, whose name has been in the news here for the last couple weeks, he's going to be coming in for a workout. And I can understand maybe what they want from him is to see if he can help out in the slot as a backup. So that's one. Lamar Houston, linebacker who's been with the Chicago Bears, I think, you know, more as a linebacker type defensive end, maybe get a little pass rush. Demonte Moore, who's been here before, a defensive end, and Eric Walden, a linebacker. So I think that you know, you can see the needs right now at defensive end and a little bit of linebacker. So you have three linebacker slash defensive ends and one cornerback. And so we'll talk more about that. Jim Morris coming up next. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.